A couch potato warning is in effect as DirecTV transforms Thanksgiving into Streamsgiving. DirecTV's got free TV nationwide. With a heavy front of 60-plus live channels and a steady stream of streaming apps, conditions are perfect for nonstop entertainment. So hunker down on the couch and sign up for your free trial of My Entertainment from DirecTV. I'm going to watch some free TV.
Start streaming My Entertainment from DirecTV now at streamsgiving.com. My free is free. Paid services. 5-day free trial, then auto renews monthly. Cancel anytime. Temporary credit hold may apply. Restrictions apply. See streamsgiving.com for details. AI produced.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Bill Raggio, the senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He keeps the Long War Journal with his colleague Tom Jocelyn and others. Tom is not with us momentarily. He's in Washington, D.C. to testify to members of Congress. We turn to conversation between Tom Jocelyn and the Senate Armed Services Committee some days past, on the last day of September, because this testimony very neatly encapsulates all the reporting that Bill and Tom and their colleagues have done for years, what we know about Afghanistan. We're looking at a picture now, after the withdrawal of the U.S. and the ISAF forces from Afghanistan. We're asking questions about what we see now and where it came from, how it connects to what we can expect to be the future for Afghanistan, for Pakistan, for the region. We begin with the news from Afghanistan, remembering always now when the Associated Press or other trusted bodies of news reporting write up what happens in Kabul or what happens after events of violence. We can only mention again and again that this is Taliban reporting to larger news sources, Taliban controlling the flow of news. This is not a transparent picture. This is nothing similar, even in the same universe, of what we had before the U.S. and ISAF withdrawal. So I read from the Associated Press, Kabul, Afghanistan. Taliban forces raided an Islamic State affiliate's hideout in the Afghan capital and killed several insurgents. Hours after a deadly bombing outside a mosque in Kabul, the Taliban said Monday, Sunday's bombing outside the Eidgah Mosque killed 5 civilians, and while no claim of responsibility was made, suspicion quickly fell on the Islamic group, which has ramped up attacks against its Taliban enemies since their takeover of Kabul in mid-August. Again, Taliban said. Further, Taliban officials had gathered at the mosque to mourn the passing of Taliban spokesman Zabihullah Mujahid's mother. Bill, a very good day to you. Thank you very much. Taliban says, Taliban says, Taliban says. What do we know about the ISIS in Afghanistan attacking the Taliban? What is the background for ISIS and Taliban? What is their enmity? Good day to you, Bill.
Good day, John. Yes, and this enmity has gone on for, I guess, 6-7 years now. The Islamic State's Khorasan province, also known as ISIS-K or ISIS Khorasan, it formed in 2014 as there were rumors that the Taliban's founder and emir, Mullah Omar, he was dead. And there was truth to that, obviously. He was dead. He died in 2013. But the Taliban leadership or elements of it concealed it from the rest of the Taliban and from the world, and basically played Weekend at Bernie's with his body. They issued press releases in his name and pretended he was alive when he was. And then the truth came out in April 2015. The Taliban admitted it, but elements of the Taliban split off. So these were disaffected Taliban leaders. Some of them joined the Islamic State, which was the Islamic State was declared in the summer of 2014 after Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi announced the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. So you had some members liking that. And then you had disaffected movement in the Taliban in Pakistan, which was, you had elements of that that were unhappy with their leadership and some members of Al-Qaeda. Typically these were unhappy commanders who felt their leadership was lying to them, or commanders who were just, and followers, by the way, who were just a little bit more, had a little bit more zeal and wanted the Islamic Emirate now, as opposed to, or the Islamic State now, as opposed to this patient Taliban and Al-Qaeda strategy of not declaring the Islamic State until you're able to defend it. So in the case with the Taliban's insurgency, the Taliban isn't going to announce their Islamic Emirate until they were able to conquer all of Afghanistan. And that's what we just witnessed this summer. So this is the origin of the Islamic State. Now, of course, in Khorasan province, of course, they're in direct opposition to the Taliban. The Taliban wants to have primacy of the jihad, of the fighting inside of Afghanistan. So the two were destined to battle. And this is what we've seen over the last several years. But the reality is the Islamic State Khorasan province never really controlled much at all in Afghanistan. Some pockets in Nangarhar and for a short period of time in Zabul and in Helmand and in some districts in northern Afghanistan and western, but it was very limited and a very short amount of time. The Taliban put down these Islamic State actions, the last bastion being in Nangarhar, and that they were defeated in 2019 with the help of the United States, by the way, a major, major mistake by the United States. And this is but they still exist. They exist at a cellular level. They're a underground terrorist organization. So they're able to conduct, sporadic attacks. In the case of the last couple of weeks, they've launched probably a dozen or so IED attacks in Nangarhar, Jalalabad, the capital of Nangarhar. And then this suicide bombing that you saw in Kabul is probably the most significant Islamic State attack since the U.S. left Afghanistan. It targeted Zabihullah Mujahid, is a significant Taliban figure. He's been their spokesman for all these years. He's been the face of the Taliban, even though we haven't really seen his face. Up until they conquered Kabul, and the targeting his mother's funeral inside of Kabul, that's a significant attack. But look, my opinion is that the Taliban over time is going to root out this network. They have the advantage of what the U.S. didn't and Kabul didn't, and that's ruthlessness, and that is ultimately what you need to go after. You need to go after the Islamic State.
A puzzle, Bill, that I do not believe is solved. The bombing that killed 13 U.S. military personnel and 169 Afghans so far, that took place during the withdrawal from Afghanistan, the Taliban blamed that on the Islamic State, and the Islamic State is said to have taken responsibility for it. The puzzle at the time and remains is how someone or ones heavily wrapped with explosives managed to get through all of the checkpoints maintained by the Taliban surrounding the airport when many American citizens we know now and green card holders were not able to get through to the airport to evacuate. And the puzzle of the time was, how does anything happen in Kabul that the Taliban doesn't know about, given their network of spies and observers and gunmen in the area? Now, this attack on the mosque at a significant Taliban event where leadership would have been gathered, it's a puzzle, Bill, only because when we saw attacks like this happening before, it was a fair guess that there was an inside source or inside help, that there was a turncoat in some fashion that gave accurate information about where and how and who to attack. And the Taliban are very careful about anybody wrapped in explosives. So I raise that possibility, Bill, as the Taliban has used Islamic State in the past as the person to blame. Remember the bombing of that school in 2020, I believe, or the maternity hospital in 2020. And have we ever settled that question when the Taliban blames Islamic State that it's accurate or that the Islamic State is not being used as a scapegoat for Taliban's own terror tactics?
Yeah, this question it remains an open question. So, the short of it is the United Nations sanctions and monitoring team identified at specific times the Taliban has used Islamic State, particularly after it was defeated in 2019, that it's occasionally used the Islamic State basically as a cutout to carry out high profile terror attacks. This would give the Taliban plausible deniability, allow these attacks in the capital and other places that would destabilize the former Afghan government, while giving the Taliban plausible deniability. So what that suggests is that at least elements of the Islamic State have been co-opted or permitted or been given a permissive act, environment to operate in and around Kabul at times. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the Islamic State would have been fully subsumed by the Taliban. I think this was, you know, this, my read on this is, again, a complex arrangement that, you know, a transactional relationship between the Taliban, particularly it was reported that members of the Haqqani network, the Haqqanis obviously, you know, being one of the most powerful Taliban factions and very strong in eastern Afghanistan. It's one of its top leaders, also is the interior minister and the deputy emir for the Taliban. So that's the environment that exists. But once the Taliban take power, the Taliban really don't have use for the Islamic State as they did in the past. So the question becomes, well, what happens to them? What happens to this relationship? We don't know the answers to any of this. And since we probably won't for quite some time, given that we have no presence now in Afghanistan, and it's going to be extremely difficult to try to figure out what is how this relationship is developed. I'm guessing, and you know, this is my educated guess on following the region, that the Taliban is working to co-opt members of the Islamic State, and they have a very powerful message. They defeated the United States, and they've taken over Afghanistan. So they're probably co-opting who they can co-opt. And those who are unwilling to do so, the diehards of the Islamic State, and they're very likely are many, they're going to wind up battling it out with the Taliban. And this is how this is probably what we're not probably this is what we're seeing right now. As far as how is, you know, in the case of the bombing at the airport, John, where the 13 U.S. military personnel were killed. So, you know, look, I have no doubt, you know, I can't prove it, but I have no doubt that the Taliban gave a permissive environment for the Islamic State to operate in that area. That area was flooded with Taliban fighters, and not just your average Taliban fighter, but very well-trained fighters who've been trained in suicide tactics by the Haqqani network. That's Badri 313. Their special operations unit, their martyrdom brigades, however you want to define them. You know, civilian targets like this mosque, the security probably isn't quite as high, although I do agree with you. You would think the Taliban would greater secure this, but they are in many ways. We don't know, given that the Taliban's directing the reporting on this, we don't really know how this attack was carried out. Was it a bomb planted in a car? Was it a suicide bomber with a vest? Was it a bomb planted, you know, in a trash can? We don't really know what happened here. And the likelihood is we never will. Because the Taliban, as you noted in your opening, controls the media. So it makes analyzing these events all the more difficult.
Bill Raggio of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. He's a senior fellow. He and Tom Jocelyn and their colleagues keep the Long War Journal. We're discussing what we know now about Afghanistan. And we're also incorporating remarks made by Tom Jocelyn before the Senate Armed Services Committee. Most recently, at the last day of September, about Afghanistan, about the situation going forward. So when we come back, Al-Qaeda. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it. Your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.